You know, if you haven't checked out What Chaos yet, you oughta, because we've had all your favorite players on the show. I'm talking Seth Jones, Lena Solmark, Connor Bedard, whoever it may be.
We're live every day on YouTube at noon Eastern, but also available on all podcast platforms, including the one you're listening to right now.
We got guests, and yeah, we're also doing a bit of chit-chat, goofing around, laughing at what makes us laugh in hockey.
So regardless of how deep you are into your hockey fandom, come listen to What Chaos. We'll talk about your favorite team, we'll talk about your least favorite team, and everybody in between, and we're having a ton of fun doing it every single day, Monday through Thursday. It's What Chaos, presented by All City Network.
Look in your home. Look in your office. Look in your home office. Everywhere you turn, there's so much smart. At Capella University, we think education should be smart too. Our game-changing FlexPath format puts you in control of your master's degree, so you can learn how, when, and where you want. Smart, huh? Yeah, we think so too. So if you want to take the next step in your career, make Capella your first step. Visit capella.edu to learn more. Capella University. Don't just learn, learn smarter.
The Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast is brought to you by Triple Threat Sports, Marishka's in Crest Hill, Dr. Squatch Soap Company, and by Fry the Coop. Here are your hosts, NBC Chicago's James Naveau and 670 The Score's hockey guy, Jay Zawoski. Let's drop the puck.
Welcome in, friends, to another Hall of Fame edition, I'll call this one, of the Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast. My name is James Naveau from NBC5 Chicago, and with me, as always, of course, is the one and only Jay Zawoski of 670 The Score and the I'm Fat Podcast, I'll have you people know. Jay, we kind of were hoping that Marian Hossa would get into the Hall of Fame today. Like, I was probably about 80% confident that he would. He did. And then we got the added bonus of Doug Wilson making it as well. So we have a twofer of Blackhawks today who are going to be enshrined in Toronto. How are you feeling today as a Blackhawks fan, my friend?
Well, today has suddenly become a really big day in Blackhawks history. We're also celebrating the 7th anniversary of 17 seconds. So now, all of a sudden, June 24th has become very, very meaningful in Blackhawks history. We're going to get to all of it. If you want to get in touch with us, it's very easy. Email us, madhousepod@gmail.com. We're on Twitter, @madhousepod, Facebook, @madhousehockeychi. And what am I missing? Anything else I want to say? Oh, yeah, of course, madhousepod.com. That's our website. It's got everything you need, including every episode, links to our sponsors, all that good stuff. That's at madhousepod.com. So if you've not checked that out, make sure you do, because I don't promote it nearly enough. I think, James, we begin with Marian Hossa, and you said you were about 80% confident that he was going to get in. Leading up to today, I was very, very confident. I felt for sure like he's going to get in. It was a no-brainer. If you look at his numbers compared to other Hall of Famers, and we'll do that a little bit later too, it was kind of seemed obvious. But then as the day went on, I don't know, something changed. I started to get kind of worried about it, kind of nervous about it, but very happy to see the Hockey Hall of Fame Twitter account. He was the second announcement after Ken Holland, who also very much deserves his place in hockey's Hall of Fame. But Marian Hossa, Hall of Famer. Man, what a such a cool moment. When we look back on the legacy of this dynasty era of the Blackhawks, you're talking a minimum four Hall of Famers. That is remarkable and noteworthy. And really, just thinking about where this team was 15 years ago, almost impossible to imagine.
Yeah, and it is wild that they were able to assemble the talent that they ended up having on this roster and to do it, obviously, in the ways that they were able to do it, whether it was via trade or whether it was via free agency or the draft. Like, there were so many guys who played such pivotal roles on this team in the modern era. And obviously, today being the anniversary of 17 seconds, it was great to kind of look back and reflect on all of the impacts that all of these different players had on the team. And of course, I know you've mentioned this ad nauseum on the podcast. I'm sure that I've mentioned it on Twitter when discussing the great free agency agent signings in Chicago sports history. And Marian Hossa is just, he's so in the conversation. He's among the top two or three easily on that list. And he made such a massive impact when he came to the Blackhawks. And he came in as a guy who had fallen short of the Stanley Cup in back-to-back seasons, had gotten a lot of flack for that, I'm sure, for being on the wrong side of the Penguins, Red Wings finals in consecutive seasons. He came into Chicago, and I know he was injured at the start of the year, but he made such a easily identifiable impact, not only on that team from an offensive perspective, but I think from a defensive one as well. I know that obviously a lot of words have been spoken about what a tremendous defensive forward Marian Hossa was for the Blackhawks. And without him, I'm sure Jonathan Toews would have developed into a just fine defensive player anyway, but he clearly took his game to another level on that side of the ice. And Hossa also had a huge impact on guys like Brandon Saad as well. So just that ability to elevate the team on both ends of the ice was just so readily apparent to Blackhawks fans throughout the eight seasons that he spent in Chicago, that today just feels like such an awesome validation of everything that Marian Hossa did while he was here. And it was so worthy of the honor that he received today.
Yeah, I've used this term a lot, and I know I used it for the first time in this podcast when we had our Marian Hossa has to retire podcast. I called it an honor to watch Marian Hossa play. And I stand by that. I think I don't take that word lightly. I think there's a few players I've seen over my time watching hockey where I can use that term. There's a lot of guys who are really, really great. Mark Lazarus said it well, too. Today he said that Mario Lemieux was the best player he's ever covered. Patrick Kane is the most electrifying, and Marian Hossa was his favorite. And one highlight that was in the Athletics piece today about Hossa that I'd sort of forgotten about, there's a moment, and I forgive me that the year is escaping me, but there's a play where Pavel Datsyuk comes behind Hossa and pickpockets Hossa and heads the other way. Immediately, Hossa puts his head down full speed, goes to the other end of the ice, and returns the favor. And Pavel Datsyuk is actually somebody that Marian Hossa credits a lot with his, I don't know, he was always good defensively, but Hossa will say that it went to a different level after playing and learning from Pavel Datsyuk after just 1 year. But those are the things. It's funny, James, when you look back, he scored so many memorable goals for the Blackhawks, none more memorable than Nashville Game 5. But when I think about Hossa highlights, they're almost always him doing some incredible feat of strength, like stealing the puck from an all-star or fending off a couple defenders with one hand. It's those moments of dominance that stand out to me. With almost every other player I can think of in my hockey-watching career, if it's not a fight or a big hit, it's almost always a goal. With Marian Hossa, the things I remember the most, the things that stand out the most vividly, are some of those defensive moments. And that, I think that, if there was any doubt about Hossa's merits as a Hall of Famer, that level of defensive play had to be, you know, the final piece to the puzzle for him.
Well, absolutely, and I think that it speaks to the evolution of Marian Hossa as a player that, yeah, he was never a bad defensive player, so to speak. When he was playing with Ottawa and with Atlanta and then with Detroit and Pittsburgh, they mostly looked to him to be an offensive guy. They wanted him to score a bunch of goals and to constantly be a puck mover and to be definitely more of an offensive forward than anything. When he came to the Blackhawks, they asked him to kind of play that a different role because they would pair him up with Jonathan Toews and they'd say, hey, yes, you're still going to have opportunities to score. You're still going to have opportunities to create offense. But way more importantly, we also need you to be more of a two-way player as well. And I know that, like you said, Hossa did start to learn those lessons under Pavel Datsyuk, but he was really able to kind of put that into practice with the Blackhawks. And as his career went on, as he slowed down a little bit, as he became more of a veteran player, you could just tell that the hockey IQ was there. He knew exactly what he needed to do to remain a viable and a really good hockey player throughout the entire tenure of his career. And even in his final season with the Blackhawks, you could still see that guy who was able to make a big impact on both ends of the ice. And it just speaks to him for his intelligence and for his skill that he was able to do so many things so well for so many years. And like you said, just absolutely was an honor to watch that guy play. And he taught me a lot just about the way hockey could be played by guys who are on the forward position.
Well, what you just said about Everything's sort of coming together defensively as he's got older in his career and his hockey IQ going up. I think that's kind of what we're seeing from Patrick Kane right now, is while maybe he's lost a little bit, and not a lot of it, but maybe a little bit of that speed that he had as a young player, and, you know, maybe a little bit of the physical abilities he had in the early part of his career, the mental part of the game has gotten so huge with Patrick Kane that is what has kept him at this MVP level. He is one of the smartest players in the game. He's a student of the game, and it really shows. Another guy who's sort of similar to that, but his body has failed him more than, well, not more than Hossa's, but more than Patrick Kane's, is Brent Seabrook. That's a guy who, he's always been a smart hockey player, and if you watch him when he plays now, you can still see what he wants to do is the right thing to do. Sometimes right. He just can't get there. With Marian Hossa, he was the combination of all of that, and that's what made him so special. And what's really cool about this is when you think back to that day in the summer of 2009, 11 years ago, in a couple days, thinking that this guy, this free agent signing, Marian Hossa, would be enshrined in the Hall of Fame as a Chicago Blackhawk. It's crazy to think that, right? Like, just considering everything he'd accomplished earlier in his career in Ottawa and Atlanta and, of course, in Pittsburgh and Detroit. But I always thought, like, he'll be remembered as a Senator. He had his best years there, probably. Some good years in Atlanta, too. But now that he's accomplished everything he has in Chicago, he's going to be remembered as a Blackhawk. And that's awesome. Real quick, want to tell you about our friends at Triple Threat Sports, triplethreatsports.com. They are still churning out those COVID masks. So hit up Chris Hubble, chris@triplethreatsports.com. Give him a call, 708-478-6090. You want a plain mask, you want a logoed mask, you want one mask, you want 10,000 masks, Chris at Triple Threat Sports will hook you up. So chris@triplethreatsports.com, 708-478-6090. Triple Threat Sports, if you can wear it, they can make it. James, I put a question on our Madhouse Podcast Twitter account at Madhouse Pod about 2 hours ago. We're recording this at 7 p.m. on what day is today? Wednesday. The question is, and I know this is not a fair question to ask, because if they don't sign Marian Hossa, they use the money elsewhere and the roster doesn't look the same. But if you take Marian Hossa off the teams, how many cups? Here's the question. How many cups would the Blackhawks have won without Marian Hossa? Now, I'm going to have, because you told me you've not looked at this yet. The options are 0, 1, 2, and 3. Do you want to guess which is leading in terms of these votes?
You clearly have a lot of people who are saying other, and they're saying they should have won 4 or more. That's clearly what it is.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm going to guess that the answer is 1. That's the one that's getting the most votes.
It's close, but it is not. The leading vote getter, as of now, we've got almost 500 votes. 48.2% say 0 Stanley Cups without Marian Hossa. 41.9% say 1. 7.8% say 2. 2.2% say 3. I say they would have won 1 without Hossa. They had enough talent on that team where they would have won 1. Maybe it's hard to say, but I think that 2013 team was the best of the three. And I think even without Marian Hossa, that team could have won a Stanley Cup. What do you think?
The reason I ended up going with 1 was because I think that they probably jumped ahead in their championship window by having him on that roster in 2009, 2010.
That's fair.
I think it allowed other guys to slot into more advantageous roles, I think, and they did get to learn from him. And they kind of had a little bit of swagger that I'm sure having a quality veteran guys on the team like John Madden and like Marian Hossa would do. And so I think that championship was definitely influenced by the addition of guys like Marian Hossa. And so I'm probably going to agree with you and say that they would have taken at least 1. Like you said, that 2013 club was so good. And I know that a lot of folks have maybe asked themselves over the years whether it kind of impacted them to like have a 48 game season instead of an 82 game season. That team was gelled together from the word go. And I think that even in an 82 game season, that's still probably the most complete collection of talent that the Blackhawks had. And they had Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane basically at the peak of their powers. So I think that they would have definitely won at least that one without Marian Hossa. So I'm going to probably go ahead and say 1, but I will say that they maybe could have snuck in and won a second one somewhere along the line without him.
Okay, so hockeyreference.com If you've ever farted around on the reference pages, the Baseball Reference, Football Reference, all those great websites, they've got similarity scores, which compares players' careers to other players with similar careers. I'm not going to make you guess. This is tough. Here are Marian Hossa's most similar players by career: Mark Messier, Brendan Shanahan, Luke Robitaille, Daniel Alfredson, Joe Thornton, Pierre Turgeon, Mike Modano, Matt Sundin, some dude named Stan Mikita, and Mark Recchi. Those are all really good players. I think eventually all of them will be in. The only one I would see maybe not getting in would be Pierre Turgeon, because he was so one-dimensional. But I think the rest of that list, I know Alfredson did not get in today, but I think he'll be in at some point as the greatest player in a franchise's history, the Ottawa Senators.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that Shane Doan is going to get in?
Probably. Maybe for the same reason, too, that Alfredson will get in, because he was by far the team's best player throughout their history and was with one team for the whole time. I know sometimes that doesn't matter, but I think Shane Doan was a really good player for a really long time anyway, but I do think the longevity with one franchise definitely helps his chances.
I would be inclined to agree with that. I appreciated Mark Lazarus's tweet about the Coyotes. He said Marian Hossa is the third Coyotes alum to become a Hall of Famer. But he did forget one other guy, so there are technically four. Who are the other three, Jay?
Oh God. Ron Francis. No, I'm on the wrong team. Hang on. Carolina. Okay. I'm thinking of Carolina for some reason. Okay. Give me the question again so I can make sure I'm hearing it clearly.
He said that Marian Hossa is the third. He's actually the fourth.
Okay.
Coyotes alum to become a Hall of Famer. He claims this is the case. I have not independently verified this. If this is incorrect, please yell at Mark Lazarus.
I off the top of my head, I don't know, but I'm sure they're like 1 year, 2 year guys that I'm just blanking on.
Even better, one of them is a 0 year guy, and his name is Chris Pronger.
Okay. Yes.
Well, so, but by the same logic that Marian Hossa is considered a Coyotes alum, so is Chris Pronger.
You're right. You're right about
so
that.
So the other two are Mike Gartner, apparently.
Okay. Yep.
And Mark says Brett Hull. I need to look that up.
Was he like? I have no recollection of him on the Coyotes.
I think he meant Bobby Hull, because Bobby Hull technically played for the Jets.
Maybe. Did Brett Hull play for the Coyotes? Maybe he did. By the way, while you're looking that up, Shane Doan's similarity scores, by the way, maybe not a Hall of Famer. Henry Richard, Jason Arnott, Rod Brind'Amour, Ryan Smith, Vyacheslav Kozlov, Rick Tocchet, Alex Delvecchio, Dave Keon, Vincent Domfus, and Doug Waite. Those are all really good players, but they're not all Hall of Famers. So maybe
Brett
not.
Hull, by the way, played 5 games for the Phoenix Coyotes.
I don't remember that, but you said it, and I was like, wait, I tried to picture him in the old, like, Sedona-style whatever uniform, and it did not seem totally foreign, but is that like Chris Chelios, the Atlanta Thrasher?
Yes, that is completely correct. And by the way, I will point out that Bobby Hull's number is retired by the Coyotes.
Okay. Well, you know, I guess you need one. That's very weird.
Well, his number hangs in the rafters of the, I think it's the Gila River Arena now there in Phoenix.
You would know. You're Mr. Coyote.
And it is actually in blue and white and red because of the Jets, obviously.
Well, yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense.
And also, by the way, Mark did also point out the alumni for the Atlanta Thrashers that have made the Hall of Fame. Hossa is in a class with Chris Chelios and with Mark Recchi.
I would imagine that Ilya Kovalchuk will be there, maybe?
I believe he will be, yes. And I also think that Shane Doan will be, so I think that's at least, you know, a couple of players from those respects. Oh, and Pavel Datsyuk. We can't forget about him. He'll also be a Coyote to make the Hall of Fame.
Man, they are one of the best teams of all time if you have guys who never played a single game for them. Or 10 games or less if you want to
get
them.
It's almost like they're the White Sox, but they're more committed to it.
Yeah, Manny Ramirez, Ken Griffey Jr., Roberto Alomar.
I know we still have to get to Doug Wilson.
Yeah,
this
we will.
Is, full of digressions. Fair or foul, the Boston Bruins congratulated Jerome McGinley on making the Hall of Fame today and posted a picture of him wearing a Bruins jersey.
The Red Wings did the same thing for Hossa. I guess it's fair. As long as they're not trying to say, like, Bruins star Jerome McGinley, if they're just acknowledging, like, hey, this guy played for us and we like him, I don't have a huge problem with it.
Well, Hossa played 74 games for the Red Wings. How many games did... Oh, Ginla played 78 with Boston. So I guess if one's one's fair, so's the other.
What about the Kings? Did the Kings acknowledge Jerome Ginla?
I have not seen that yet.
Did he play a game for them? I think he had to, right?
He played 19 games for the Kings, as a matter of fact.
Here's a fun, before the hockey playoffs ramp up, here's a fun thing. If you want to email us, madhousepod@gmail.com. Great players who played a handful of games for teams you don't remember.
All right, I did really like Brett Hull because I was like, oh, did Mark screw up? Did he mean Bobby Hull? Because Bobby Hull's number is retired by the Coyotes, and then sure enough, Brett played 5 freaking games for us.
Who could forget, aside from literally everybody? All right, before we get to good old number 24, Doug Wilson, want to tell you about our friends at Fry the Coop and frythecoop.com. Hot chicken. It is one of the best food items on the planet. I've said this before. I'll say it again. I've had all the staples in Nashville. Fry the Coop is better than all of them, and I don't say that lightly. I would lie to you, or I'd be like, it's almost as good as those, or it's as good as those. Nope, it's better than all of those. Oaklawn, Elmhurst, Westtown are open right now. They do have another location on Wells Street Market there. It's currently closed. I'm not sure what the plan is in the coming days as Phase 4 begins. That might be opening up soon, so keep your eye on frythecoop.com. I've been reading you items from the menu, but I'll just tell you what I get when I go. Every time I get that tender plate, 3 jumbo tenders with fries and coleslaw. I get 2 medium and a hot because the hot are really hot. But if you've got, if you're willing to take a risk, there's a couple other options for you heat-wise. There's crazy and there's a little insanity. So 2 levels above hot. And for me, a guy that loves spicy food, the hot is a struggle. I will sweat. I will, kind of breathe heavily as I'm eating it, but it's worth it. It's delicious. Go check them out. Come get your happiness at Fry the Coop and frythecoop.com. All right, James, Doug Wilson, San Jose Sharks GM, and Blackhawks legend, finally, after all these years, in the Hall of Fame. And I know podcast audiences skew younger. I know that the Blackhawks fan base is made up of a lot of people who jumped on over the last 11, 12 years. I'm going to read an excerpt from my upcoming book, The Big 50, The Men and Moments Who Made the Chicago Blackhawks. Here's a little piece of what I wrote about Doug Wilson. Here we go. All Wilson managed to do was win a Norris Trophy, make the All-Star team 7 times, and become the Blackhawks' all-time leading scorer for defensemen with 779 points. That point total puts him ahead of Dennis Hull, Pitt Martin, and Jeremy Roenick. Jonathan Toews passed Doug Wilson during the 2019-20 campaign, the 13th season of his NHL career. Wilson is currently 15th all-time for NHL defenseman with 827 points between Chicago and San Jose. At the time of his retirement, the only defensemen with more career points than Wilson were Bobby Orr, Dennis Potvin, Ray Bourque, and Paul Coffey. All 4 of those players are in the Hall of Fame. The only one of them who can claim to be as defensively competent as Wilson is Bobby Orr, who may be the best player in the history of the game, not named Gretzky. The only defenseman in NHL history to win a Norris Trophy and not be in the Hall of Fame is Randy Carlyle. Doug Wilson has 180 more career points than Randy Carlyle. A little more. In November of 2019, the Daily Herald's Barry Rosner wrote about why Wilson might not be in the Hall of Fame. He says, quote, "The league was really run by Bill Wirtz, and Wirtz was closely aligned with Alan Eagleson and Bob Pulford, all of them sticking by one another until the end. As president of the NHLPA, it was Doug Wilson who led the charge to remove Eagleson, the man with massive conflicts of interest as a Players Association director who stole from players, got in bed with owners, and was eventually jailed for fraud and embezzlement. But in the process of trying to form a legitimate NHLPA, Doug Wilson was blackballed. There's no other explanation for his exclusion from the Hall of Fame. So that exclusion is now over. two Blackhawks in the Hall of Fame today, Marian Hossa and Doug Wilson. It's a great day for Blackhawks fans. Congratulations to both those guys. Now the question is, Jeremy Roenick, Steve Larmer, are these guys running out of time? Do they have a chance? I think both of them are Hall of Famers. And I know I'm a Hawks fan, and I know Jeremy Roenick is my favorite hockey player ever, off the ice, whatever, but on the ice, my favorite. Both those guys should be in. And the more time that goes by, the more I worry that they're going to get left behind.
I mean, where do you even start? Like, I honestly, like, I was completely taken by surprise by this happening today. Like, it's been so long since he's been eligible for the Hall of Fame. I didn't even think about it being, like, a possibility that he could potentially get in. I mean, think about it. He retired 27 years ago.
Yeah.
Like, and I, when I first saw that he'd gotten in, I was like, he wouldn't be brought in as a builder, would he? And then I saw that Ken Holland had also gotten in, and so I was like, well, I guess he's in as a player then. I don't know, but I mean, his resume obviously speaks for itself. Like you said, Jay, almost 1,000 career games with the Blackhawks. Their all-time leader among blue liners in points. Norris Trophy winner, had come close to winning that on several other occasions. I mean, Wilson clearly had a really strong career, and just kind of looking back on it, obviously he played a little bit before my time. I like barely remember him playing. I mean, he left the Blackhawks, I think, when I was 6 years old or so. So, like, there's not a whole lot of memories that go into it for me and Doug Wilson. But obviously, looking back at those statistics, looking at his Norris Trophy votes and all that stuff, it sure seems like this was a long overdue honor for Doug Wilson. And if for no other reason, he should be honored by the Blackhawks because he provided one of the biggest boosts to their future team. Because in 2010, he offered Nick Jalmerson an offer sheet, forced the Blackhawks to match it. They got rid of Antti Niemi, and it ushered in the Corey Crawford era. Boom. Thanks, Doug Wilson. We appreciate you.
You know what, though? That was a really savvy move for him, because he knew by offering that offer sheet to Jalmerson that the worst-case scenario is he ends up with Antti Niemi. So that was really smart for him. And of course, the Hawks made the right decision in choosing Jalmerson over Niemi. Oh, I mean, wow. That did not seem as easy at the time when that was all happening after the 2010 season. People were like, I don't know, Nicholas Jalmerson, he could end up being really good. But Niemi, maybe they'll win a cup without him in 2010. The right choice was made. They kept the right guy. And but you're right. But I do think, too, though, that Wilson's, even if he's not in for the merits as a GM, which he probably should be, he hasn't won a cup, but that team's been competitive his entire tenure. That has kept him in the spotlight. You know, Roenick has the spotlight of being on TV, or maybe being on TV again at some point, right? But Steve Larmer doesn't really have anything keeping him in the minds of people, aside from the people in Chicago sort of, you know, propping him up for induction. But do the work. When my book comes out, you can read all about it. I mean, he is absolutely a Hall of Fame player. Absolutely. By the way, Doug Wilson, one of the last guys in hockey to not wear a helmet. Young James Neveau, do you know the last player in the NHL to not wear a helmet? We'll see. I got to be honest with you.
I had thought that when I saw his name today pop up, I was like, was he the last guy? Like,
he was
I
not.
Couldn't. Yeah, I couldn't remember, so I was like, yeah, I gave up, and I didn't end up looking up the answer to that question.
Craig McTavish, the last NHL player.
Good old Guts McTavish.
Yep, yanking the tongue off the Calgary Flames mascot, the finest moment of his career.
You know what? He frankly had it coming. Let's just be honest here.
Absolutely he did. All right, we've got another anniversary to celebrate today. We're going to take a quick timeout. First, I want to tell you about our friends at Marischka's in Crest Hill, 604 Theodore Street, family-owned and operated since 1933. Go try the poor boy. Go get the steaks, the chops, the seafood. They are open for business, so go to marischkas.com or facebook.com/marischkas. You're going to love it. I'm going out there. I'm making the decision, damn it. I'm going next week. I'm going to find a day that works for me to go to Marischka's and get that poor boy. I have been craving it like crazy. Every time I do a read for Marischka's, I die a little bit inside because it's been so long since I've been there. Pandemic! Damn you! I need a poor boy. I'm going to go. I had my first outdoor dining experience tonight, James. I'll talk to you about it off the air because they're not a sponsor yet. It was lovely, though. It really felt normal for the first time in forever. So I'm going to go return the favor to Marishka because they've been supporting us forever. It's time for me to do my part and go visit our friends. So join me, 604 Theater Street in Crest Hill. You will absolutely love it. Let's take a quick timeout, reset, get a drink of water, and we will remember the 2013 Blackhawks Stanley Cup Championship after this on the Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast.
Welcome back in, friends, to this edition of the Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast. We've been spending our time talking about the induction of Marian Hossa and Doug Wilson into the Hockey Hall of Fame. By the way, I was not the only person who was caught unaware by the induction of Wilson today. It took the Blackhawks Twitter account a good solid 20 minutes to be like, oh, wait, he got in too. We need to send something out. They had all these lovely graphics ready for Marian Hossa, all these emotional memories, and then Doug Wilson happened and they were like, oh, for the love of God, crap, we have to do this too.
Hey,
so
this would
the
not
Blackhawks
happen under...
were even caught unaware. It was not just me, and I feel a little bit better about myself because of that.
That would not have happened under the watchful eye of John McDonough. Just saying. Just saying.
Attention to detail. That's what that John McDonough is known for.
I was waiting for the email to come like instantly across the wire as soon as it happened. I'm like, come on, Hawks, let's go. You know, McDonough would be cracking some whips over there. Sheesh. Just slacking, that's all. I'm obviously kidding.
No, you're not. You're dead serious.
No, but I mean, it doesn't matter, but it absolutely would not have been that long if you would. Who cares? Okay, it's a pandemic. People have excuses. Whatever. It doesn't matter. So, yes, 17 seconds. I've told this story before. I'm going to tell it again because it was one of the most wild nights of my life. In 2013, the show I was working on at the time, which was Matt Spiegel and Dan McNeil, and they were together, oddly enough, for this couple weeks of the Stanley Cup Final. We traveled to Boston for the series, and for game six, I had post-game duties on the score, so they put me in. We were at the WEEI studios, which are not in downtown Boston, like kind of in the burbs a little bit. So I'm in a studio, which is probably like a production studio, not a typical on-air studio, dialed into the board at the score, just waiting for the game to end. And across from me is an FM DJ doing his show. He's wearing a Bruins jersey. He's, you know, got really long hair, kind of looks like Axl Rose, whatever. So what's crazy is we're both watching this game. Clearly I'm cheering for the Hawks. Clearly he's cheering for the Bruins, and we can see each other as the entire game's going on. So, you know, it's 2-1, time's running out. I'm a nervous wreck. He's standing up. He's getting excited that the Bruins are going to win and force a game seven. And then Bickle scores, and I jumped so high and pounded the table that he literally like kind of jumped. I hit the table so hard, and this is between soundproof glass. Okay, then 17 seconds later, Dave Bolin scores, and in a couple minutes now, all of a sudden, I'm preparing for overtime, getting my notes ready. Hawks take the lead. I'm like, crap, I got to be on the air in a few minutes, so I'm scrambling. All of a sudden, I can't connect to the score. Somehow the connection has been lost. So the game ends. I pick up my cell phone, start hosting the show from my cell phone. Okay, so I'm interviewing. I think this was such a blur, but I'm interviewing John McDonough from my phone while he's on someone else's phone. This is all on the air in the score. Okay, just two phone calls. It's literally airing a phone call. In the other hand, I have another phone talking to the engineer in Boston. So I'm like, yeah, okay, John, hey, congratulations on winning the Stanley Cup. You know, you're second in 3 years, you know, 4 years. How does it feel? Oh, you know, it sounds great. Take the phone off my ear. Talk to the engineer. Okay, what the hell do I need to do to get reconnected again? All right, hang on. Yeah, that sounds great, John. Hey, you know, we really enjoy the night. So I'm interviewing John McDonough while talking to an engineer on the other phone. It was by far the craziest moment of my radio career. I was not as not laughing about it as much then. I wasn't laughing about it as much then as I am now. I was livid, and I was trying to make sure I wasn't swearing on the air because I was so mad because everything was fine, and then somebody went and messed with something. But to me, that is my vivid memory of the 17 seconds is panic they're going to lose and have to play a game seven, jubilation that they've tied it, panic that, holy crap, they're up now, and I have to get ready for a show that's going to start in a few minutes, to absolute panic of, holy crap, we're no longer connected, and I have to be on the air here in a minute. It was absolute chaos, And I'll never forget that. That if people say, like, what's the one story from your radio career that you'll never forget, that's the one.
I still insist that you're the one who screwed it up because you and your table pounding antics.
You might be right. Shit. That might be correct. Well, there's no way to prove it, though, so it's not even worth talking about it. But I did
right,
hit the table,
not.
Really. But the table was not the console. The table was a side. It was another part of... Okay, I might have done it. Damn it.
Was the console on the table by chance?
Well, the console's in the table. It's like built into the, you know, the mixing board.
Oh, yeah, because
like,
I'm sure that's not going to... No vibration, no reverberation is going to happen from that.
But it's like a right angle table. So the board's in front of me. The table I hit was to my left. So it's like an L table.
Well, clearly it was a wrong angle table.
Nice. Well done. But it was the other side, the other... Whatever. Yes, I might have broken it. Fine.
I like how you keep like defending yourself and then going, you know, I might actually be wrong.
I have no proof that I didn't break it.
The gears are turning in the head of Jay Zawoski right now. He's like, can I possibly justify my behavior? Did I actually cause this technological hiccup?
The behavior was absolutely warranted. I mean, it was a chaotic moment. It was a huge moment in the history of my hockey fandom. I'm not mad that I was excited, but yeah. Yeah, it might have been me.
It's possible. Yeah.
Well. What did you break the night of Game 6 in 2013, James?
We broke our couch, I believe. I believe that is what ended up happening. I think there was so much. There were literally, I have a two-bedroom apartment. It's about 850, 900 square feet, so not a big place. And we had probably 30 people in here for that game. And you could pretty much hear a pin drop during the third period of the game because they were down 2-1. One of my friends was over here, and he just enjoys, like, relishes kind of being the troll. So, like, he'll always, like, kind of needle you, and he's, like, rooting for Boston and doing whatever. And my wife to this day says that she wanted to throw him off of the balcony, and I don't think she would have been opposed by anybody other than him, obviously. And so, like, he's just talking all sorts of smack, all sorts of craziness. I'm blogging about the game. I'd literally been on the job with NBC for like 2.5 months, so
how drunk
I was,
were you?
Like, help, what's that?
Were you drunk at all?
No
Good for you.
No, I dude, I, this pro. Was still early enough in my tenure at NBC that I didn't want to screw anything up. I didn't want to, like, get fired for sending out, like, a misspelled headline or something like that. So my story of 2010 was complete jubilation because I was just kind of, like, you know, goofing around and freelancing. Everything was fine. 2015, I was at the United Center, so my reaction to them winning the cup was muted. I didn't say anything to anybody other than, you know, time to go downstairs and talk to guys and go out on the ice and blah, blah, blah. But 2013, fear. 100% fear that I would screw something up. And so, like, when Bickle scored the goal, obviously I celebrated, but I was also like, okay, I need to get the story ready for overtime potentially. I need to make sure all my ducks in a row. And oh my God, Dave Bolin just scored. What the hell do I do? Oh my God. And it just was like this whole cascading thing. I have friends jumping up and down on the couch, hugging each other since the game is coming close to ending. And I'm sitting there feverishly trying to rewrite my lead of my story and my headline and all that stuff, and it just all kind of passed in a blur. Like, that minute of game time that kind of transpired between all of that and the end of the game is just all a complete blur to me. Like, I have very vivid memories of Kane scoring the goal in Philadelphia, of watching Kane and Keith score in Game 6 of the final in 2015. I barely remember anything about 2013 because it just was all, like, so nerve-wracking for me. And then when they finally won it, obviously there was at least some relief that my ordeal was finally over.
Yeah, you know, relief is a good word for it, because Barf Cry Die was a famous meme during the Blackhawks playoffs. I don't remember who gets credit for it, but somebody in the Blackhawks hockey Twitter sphere.
There was also
that.
Fruit and Crap, which was one that I really enjoyed.
Fruit and Crap with Seabrook, yeah. But the it was so – watching all those Cup playoff series were so stressful. And when you got to the Stanley Cup final, it almost felt like just let me off the hook. Just one way or another. Just something happened. Someone, like, hit me with a bus so I don't have to feel this tension anymore. The worst I ever felt it was the Detroit series in 2013. Before Game 7 – of that series where Seabrook won it in overtime. Dude, I could not sit down the entire day. That was the most stressed out I've been. But, like, just going back now, because they've been showing, recently they've been showing the 2015 playoffs. And when you watch them, you know, now in hindsight, you kind of recognize how good the Hawks were and how even when they weren't winning the game, for the most part, they had things under control. Sometimes they just wouldn't win, but they were almost always the better team on the ice. When you're watching it in real time, every mistake is catastrophic. Every turnover is like, what are you doing? But when you go back and watch, knowing the outcome, you really get to see and appreciate how awesome those teams were. And I still, 2013 team, I don't think there's much argument about it, was the best of the three. I think 2010 was my favorite just because everything came together a little bit earlier than expected because of Hossa, because of John Madden, because of all those things. Man, it's just, I'm so glad. It's like the one good thing to come out of this pandemic is I get to go back and watch old Hawks playoff games without the stress.
Boy, your mouth to God's ear, man. Playoff hockey can be the absolute greatest thing in the world when your team is not involved and you can just root for chaos and nonsense and whatever else. But when it's your team, there is nothing worse. It is so bad, and you're like watching through your fingers and you just can't even like deal with the emotion and the heaviness of the moments. And I'm so glad that they won all three of the cup finals that they were in, because I thought 2014 was a nut punch when they lost in the conference final. Imagine if they had lost in the Stanley Cup final in one of those 3 years, especially in 2010. That would have absolutely sucked. So I'm glad they didn't.
Yeah. Oh, man, I'm just, you know, I'm getting sweaty just thinking about those games. And speaking of being sweaty, you don't want to smell bad.
This sounds like a transition.
It sure does, doesn't it? Our newest partner on the Madhouse podcast is Dr. Squatch. They are a made in the USA soap company. I've told this story. I'll keep it short in case you've heard it before. I was scrolling through Instagram one night and Dr. Squatch's ad caught my eye. It was really funny. It was appealing. And I've been someone who had been dealing with skin conditions for a long time. I didn't have anything like medical, but my hands would be so dry that between my fingers would literally crack and bleed. There was one day working at the score where a trickle of blood was running down my knuckle just from sitting there with, you know, that's how cracked and dry my skin was. So I was desperate for a change. I'd been using the 3-in-1 shampoo conditioner soap made by another soap company. I'm like, screw this. I need to try something new. Their ad was informative, so I ordered a couple bars of Dr. Squatch. I got the cedar citrus and I got the pine tar. And I'm not kidding you, within a couple days, my hands were completely different. I'm feeling my hands right now. They're smooth. The areas between my fingers are soft. They're not cracked. They're not white and flaky. The pine tar and the cedar citrus, like I said, both have exfoliants in them. They've got, you know, chunks of oatmeal to take away that dead skin. Second round of my subscription, I ordered the Cool Fresh Aloe, which is not a exfoliant. It's just nice. It smells beautiful. It's my favorite smell of the soap so far. And then I tried this week the Cold Brew Cleanse. Absolutely love all of them. Go to drsquatch.com, add $20 worth of product to your cart, and enter the promo code MADHOUSE. You will save on your order and at the same time support James and I here on the podcast. Here's what I'm going to recommend. Your first order, you're going to want to get 2 bars of soap. Okay, take the Squatch quiz at the top of the page. Find the ones that suit you best, suit your needs. You're going to want to get a soap saver. You're investing in good quality soap. You're going to want it to last. So get yourself that soap saver. And the hair care kit is absolutely clutch. Great conditioner, great shampoo. I learned from Dr. Squatch, you're not supposed to shampoo your hair every day, just every 2 or 3 days. Since I've done that, my hair's been thicker. My hair's been healthier. My scalp has been more moist. Everybody loves that word. So go to drsquatch.com, try out some of their soaps. I'm just looking on their website right now. A new scent for the 4th of July, Freedom Fresh. I got to try this one out. I'm very excited about Freedom Fresh. It is a red, white, and blue soap, damn it. Because of course it is. Drsquatch.com, promo code MADHOUSE. We really, really appreciate your support. James, is there anything else we need to tie up here? Any loose ends we haven't gotten to on today's podcast?
current hockey, there is a little bit of developments this week in terms of the NHL potentially evaluating hub cities. We could talk about that for a moment.
Yes, and Chicago, one of the finalists, one of the six finalists.
Chicago still among six teams still in the running. This week, the NHL knocked out several cities. They knocked out Columbus, knocked out Pittsburgh. They knocked out Minneapolis and Dallas. We're all told they were no longer in the running. Chicago's still in, along with Las Vegas, which I'm going to circle back to in a moment, and Los Angeles, and then up north in Edmonton, Vancouver, and Toronto. All three of those Canadian cities still in, and it sure seems like the NHL would like to have at least one of these hubs in Canada. I wanted to bring up Vegas because for a while now, Vegas has been kind of considered a front runner or even a favorite to land the role as one of these hub cities. Data out of Clark County has not been looking good lately. Cases are continuing to go up there. In fact, the governor of Nevada just mandated literally about 20 minutes ago or so that all people going outdoors into public in Nevada will now have to wear masks. You would have to think that the NHL is keeping a very close eye on where cases are starting to go up. And I would think, even if Vegas is a favorite because of the amenities, because of all the hotels that they have, and the ability to kind of set up this so-called bubble to make sure that teams in the hub city are safe, you'd have to imagine the NHL is still not digging, going to a place where the case numbers continue to go up, especially in light of what's happened to multiple Major League Baseball teams in Florida and what's going on in other cities like Los Angeles and then down in Arizona and in Texas. They've got to be keeping a really close eye on this because obviously the COVID numbers not looking too great in several of the places that the league had been considering having hub cities placed.
Well, I think that's why the longer this goes on and the longer Chicago remains in the race, the better I feel about it, because Illinois has been doing a kick-ass job. And I know that Governor Pritzker and Mayor Lightfoot lost a lot of fans during this whole thing, but sometimes a politician needs to be unpopular. And look, you can praise one thing about a politician while criticizing another part. It doesn't have to be all or nothing. And I think the way Pritzker and Lightfoot have handled it up to this point has been very good. And the people of Illinois have responded for the most part. And that's why we're allowed to have nice things now. We took it seriously. We wore masks, we distanced, we stayed home. And all of a sudden, Illinois is opening up, Chicago's opening up, and we're starting to get back to reality a little bit. So good job, Illinois. Good job, everybody listening that did your job here. And I hope that's not too late for these southern states that did not take this seriously and you know, chose to politicize it over following the science. I hope it doesn't get so bad that it gets out of control. It's kind of there already, but hopefully they can, I don't know, hopefully they can take it around, but it's really, really, take it down. But it's really, really sad. But hey, you know what? Good news for Chicago. Like we've talked about a couple times since this news came out, the abundance of facilities and hotel rooms really works in Chicago's favor. So we will see. It's very, very strange. And now with baseball back and they're all playing in their home buildings,
yeah,
I don't know, man. It's just, it's kind of crazy to think that this is all going to be happening, you know, in about a month or so. I just, in my wildest dreams, would not have imagined we get to this point. We still might not. This whole thing could go to hell.
I was actually going to bring that up. Like, we're already seeing some kind of holes in the bubble, so to speak. I mean, even on the PGA Tour, where social distancing is kind of the order of the day, like, you, it's not a team sport. Like, you are able to stand fairly far away from your opponents in that sport, and yet we keep seeing positive tests on the PGA Tour. And we just had, I know Brooks Koepka's caddy had to drop out of the tournament that they were in this week, and Brooks withdrew. It just is something that, you know, we're going to have to get used to this. Like, Charlie Blackman for the Rockies just tested positive for COVID. A lot of teams down in Florida that have been training are starting to see positive tests, including the Marlins, the Phillies,
the Lightning,
the Blue Jays. This is, as these guys start to come into facilities and as they start to get tested, I think we need to steel ourselves for the reality that some of these guys are going to test positive and that the bubble is not going to be something that's a completely foolproof solution. And it's going to be really interesting for me to see how the NHL and other pro sports that are going to look to resume play, the way that they're going to deal with that if and when they do get those positive tests.
Yeah. I mean, did you see the Austin Matthews thing is weird. Like, that story is trying to go away for some reason. I don't know if you've seen that, but Austin Matthews was reported by Steve Simmons last week that he had the virus, but it's kind of like no one else is reporting it, which is kind of strange. I'm not the biggest Steve Simmons fan, but it's kind of a random thing to just throw out there without it being true. So
I would also like to point out that I'm sure Austin Matthews was in Arizona.
He was. Yes, he was.
So I mean, and I do also agree with you that it is very strange, and it does kind of bring up like an interesting question to me is who decides how like players are identified that come down with COVID? Like, doesn't that, it seems a little, especially when it's a situation like that where the team's not confirming like much information, like what responsibility do reporters have not to out players that, you know, test positive? I mean, it's not like it's, I guess you can argue it's in the interest of the fans, but I would hardly consider that to be like the public interest to let people know what's going on with that.
Well, at some point you get into HIPAA violations too. So it is a slippery slope. It is very strange. I don't know if we need to know specifically who has it, but if they announced that four Blackhawks had COVID-19, we'd want to know who they are selfishly, but I don't know if it really changes the situation. This is going to be weird. Like, imagine the Hawks are, they upset the Oilers. Next round, they're playing Dallas, and Patrick Kane gets COVID-19, God forbid, right? And then he's got to miss 2 weeks, and then what? All these sports, if they're even played, are going to be very, very different, very, very weird. And I heard baseball historian George Will on The Score this week sort of saying, like, whatever happens, however these teams win, it's not going to feel right. It's not going to feel complete. But, hey, sports are back. Asterisk, we hope so. But, man, what a day for the Blackhawks. What a week in hockey. And before we know it, training camp will be open on July 10th, and we will have some actual hockey to look forward to. But until then, we're going to wrap things up here. Thanks for listening to this week's episode of the Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast. For my partner, James Naveau, I'm Jay Zawoski. Have a great rest of your week. We'll talk to you next time on the Madhouse Podcast.
The Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast was brought to you by Triple Threat Sports, Marischka's in Crest Hill, Dr. Squatch, and by Fry the Coop.